from unknown parts of metropolitan New York City. I am the hip of this is Lee.
Yes, yes. Hello, hello, everybody out there in H&L Nation. Indeed. Good evening or good morning, good afternoon, whenever you might be joining us on this post-Super Bowl edition of H&L, as my partner seems to be ready and raring to go after a little bout, a little gastrointestinal issue and a bout with the dropsies and the leaksies over the weekend. It looks like he's in rare form this evening, and I'm sure he cannot wait to get it all rolling, as there's so much to do, so much to cover, and who knows, we might be here all night.
Well, then you might as well just turn it off. Now, look, look, we got plenty to get to. It was an exciting Super Bowl game. It's been covered ad nauseum prior, leading up to the game, since the game. We'll find a unique spin on it as we always do. But before we go there, we are, by and large, a New York sports podcast, okay? And I want to ask you a very simple question. Who is the hottest team in New York sports right now?
I don't know. Every single team sucks. I guess that would have to be a team that's not playing. So, I don't know.
Could it be a team that is playing.
The hottest team in New York sports right now. Well, all the hockey teams. Well, the Devils are still good. At least on paper, their standings would tell you
that. All right, there's not one that's jumping off the page to you, so you're not going to answer it correctly. Then the answer is the St. John's Red Storm.
In a month, the Yankees and Mets have not lost in 3 months, so I guess they're both pretty hot. So the four of those teams are pretty hot.
The correct answer is the St. John's Red Storm.
I know. Duke and now Villanova. How about that? I was actually going to bring that up later, but you beat me to it. All right.
I mean, I think it's back page headline news. You beat Duke. Look, it was at home, at the Garden over the weekend. Fine, but then you go into Villanova and beat a team that was 22-1. You were 0-11 in the Big East. St. John's was 0-11. In the Big Duke, in a span of 4 days, beat a four seed, the fourth best team, and the number one team in the country. It's just beyond remarkable.
Apparently, St. John's was ranked 158. They were the 158th ranked team in the country, and then they beat the fourth best team and the best team. So go figure.
Well, I think, look, as of today, I think you have to say they're like a top 40 team. If they're going to beat the number four team and number one team in 4 days. Now, look, their body of work, obviously, they're 1-11 in the Big East. How can you say they're a top 40 team? Well, you take a short window back. Come on. I mean, look, we'll see if they sustain this level of play. I mean, look, expecting them to be top, 15 teams without losing is not sustainable, but I still don't think they can. I guess they could win the Big East tournament, but that's not going to happen.
Well, that's the only way they can get in, though, right? I mean, they can win every game the rest of the season. They still ought to. Maybe they'd be a bubble team at that point. I mean, right? They would have to win the tournament. That's.
I mean, has there ever been a story of a team that like had such a horrible, first, 60-70% of its season, but then did a complete 180 and was just on fire, and they got in even though their overall resume just doesn't produce what you would expect for a tournament team? Well, we'll revisit it, but I just think it's a really, for New York sports fans, if you need anything right now.
Rangers lose 6-1 tonight. KP out for the year. Islanders suck. Their GM says we're not doing anything. And, and by the way, the Nets are still in existence, but who cares? Because they're the Nets.
Hey, Russell Wilson's on the Yankees. Yes, that's exciting.
Oh, yes. He's going to duke it out with Tim Tebow, who's the best quarterback in New York baseball. Russell Wilson versus Tim Tebow.
Oh my God! And I did I read correctly that Russell Wilson does plan to report in some fashion?
Yes, apparently he does it every year. He has a high old time doing it. They're like, drop on by. We'll chill. You know, we'll take some batting practice. Take some ground balls. Maybe he'll pull a Roger Dorn in the field. Come on, Dorn, get in front of the damn ball. Come on, Wilson. Maybe he'll duke it out with Tim Tebow. They'll throw footballs in the tires as Tebow goes 25 yards above the tire, and Wilson's closing his eyes and throwing it backwards through the tire.
Is this the Yankees kind of like indirectly mocking the Mets signing of Tebow by doing this and saying, hey, you know what, we could get a quarterback that's going to get more attention on our team than yours?
Well, I mean, for some reason, Tim Tebow still actually gets attention. He'll hit a home run, you know, in Little League again, off of a 9-year-old pitcher, and it'll generate headlines. Oh, Tim Tebow! he'll hit off the tee. He'll play T-ball and hit a double off the wall, and it'll generate headlines. I mean, that's everything he does generates headlines is Tim Tebow, and we still can't understand the phenomena that is Tim Tebow. But Russell Wilson is a New York Yankee. Get excited, Yankee fans. Oh, maybe he'll play second base since the Yankees still don't have a second baseman. And now that Todd Frazier is a member of the 9 Mets, yes, Todd Frazier is bringing his thumbs and pointing them down, as he'll be doing all year for the New York Mets, but not out of sheer joy, out of sheer sadness, because they're the Mets and everything they do is always thumbs down.
Not a bad signing for the Mets, at least. I mean, Todd Frazier has a decent on-base percentage, some pop, plays good defense, you know. Good signing for them. Only locked them, you know, only 2-year deal, $17 million, nothing crazy. And what an interesting free agent market for Major League Baseball. I don't ever remember a time that we were this late into the offseason. It's almost pitchers and catchers isn't even that terribly far away, and you still have big name free agents out there, pitchers and you could actually construct a pretty strong batting lineup from 1 to 9 of current free agents. Like, it would almost look like an all-star team. It's that there's still that many good players and a couple of top flight starters as well. It's pretty remarkable.
Who's on the mound? Good 1 through 9, but who's on the mound? Is it Darvish? Is it Arrieta? Yes, we're maybe we'll get phone calls.
Yeah, Alex Cobb, of course. Alex Cobb.
You want to come in and for the league?
Really interesting. This is a very I don't ever remember it dragging out this long.
And now you're hearing the word collusion, and who knows how this is all going to shake out until like you said, pitchers and catchers only a few weeks away. And it's very odd, very bizarre. And you figure that every single player eventually will find a team before spring training. But yeah, right now, I mean, you've heard threats going back and forth from both the Players Association and MLB. You know, the Players Association saying collusion, MLB saying, how dare you suggest such a thing? It's the agent's fault. They don't understand the market and what they're worth and blah, blah, blah. And so that'll be an interesting story, at least as time goes on, as we get closer and nobody is signing because they're all holding out.
I mean, a couple of quick names just for those that are not, you know, as dialed in. Eric Hosmer. You said Darvish, Arrieta, JD Martinez, the dude, Moustakas. I mean, he's just a crazy slugger, right? Moustakas. Who else are we forgetting here? Lance Lynn. He's a solid starter.
Lance Lynn.
We said Alex Cobb. Frank Holland, a pretty good closer. I mean, the list goes on. Your buddy, Eduardo Nunez.
Oh, Nuni, that's right. I saw that. Apparently there's a lot of interest locally for Nuni.
It's a very, very interesting. It's almost like the free agents can have their own spring training because there's enough good players to field a team.
Hey, who knows? Okay. Maybe Russell Wilson will get a call up from another team. You know, the Yankees, I don't know if they'll have room for him unless he's going to supplant Giancarlo Stanton. But maybe one of these other teams will say, we don't want to pay Mike Moustakas $20 million a year. Hey, Russell, you want to play baseball when you're not playing football? They pull a little Bo Jackson or Deion Sanders?
So, all right, let's take a few minutes. Well, probably more than a few minutes. Doing the obligatory exit interview on the NFL season, including the Super Bowl.
You all stunk. You're all fired. Get out.
An absolutely riveting football game. Roger Goodell grinning at the end, I'm sure, because to me, it just put a cap. It took what was really a mediocre NFL season, a lot of uninspiring play from a fan's perspective, a lot of sloppy play, a lot of just slow games, lopsided games, and this game was the complete opposite of that. I mean, this you were glued to the screen from start to finish. You didn't want to miss a single play. Obviously, tons of offense, which, you know, the fans love to see. And like down to the very game. Last play.
Like Air Force versus Hawaii, like in October.
I mean, the team Patriots who lost didn't punt a single time. I mean, it's just so many remarkable stats that you can, you know, handpick to kind of highlight how just bizarre of a football game this was. But in the end, it was a great game. Couple of interesting replays with the catch rule that kind of kept, which is a problem that the NFL is going to continue to have. But I think they got them right in this context. But your high level thoughts, Mr. Lip.
Well, for me, you said that this was a thrilling game, and it was. I thought last year was actually more compelling, and we had a lot more. I mean, honestly, and I have a lot of notes, and you've made note of all the notes that I made about this game. But honestly, there was a lot more to break down last year. Last year, the game had so many moving parts. I mean, you know, we were here for at least 25 minutes breaking down that game. And, you know, just the comeback and all the things that Atlanta did and the bad play calling and the bad decisions and everything that went on and, you know, the miraculous plays made by the Patriots, Edelman, the ball hanging in the air, overtime, all of that. This year, see, this was your typical, you know, you have two types of games. You have a type of game in the NFL in which either you have all offense, where up and down the field for both teams, no defense at all, bad tackling, you know, no pressure on the quarterback or whatever, just up and down the field. And then whoever, it's either team with the last with the ball last wins, or a big special teams play or defensive play is the difference in the game. And that's exactly what we had here. And, you know, unlike last year. And, I mean, basically that's what it was. It was up and down the field for both teams. Nick Foles looked like Joe Montana times 10 out there. Brady had a great game as well. I mean, there's so many, I mean, you do have things to dissect. We can start with Malcolm Butler, the decision by Bill Belichick to sit Malcolm Butler and give us nonsense crap as to why he didn't play in the game. You know, the speculation rampant. Well, was it disciplinary? You know, was it his overall play? Was it practice sick? Whatever it might've been. You know, Belichick gave us the, you know, oh, well, not discipline. I'm not telling you. You're going to have to sit there and just guess as to why he didn't play, even though the secondary was absolutely shredded in this game. And the master, brilliant strategist, tactician that is Bill Belichick, and the, you know, and the master at making halftime adjustments made absolutely no, or at least didn't make the obvious adjustment by putting Butler in the game at some point, a guy that played 98% of the snaps throughout the course of the season and, oh, every snap in both playoff games. I don't know, you know, what you thought about that. I mean, he's getting killed in New England right now. There's still no explanation. Butler came out and said all the rumors about him was, you know, complete nonsense. So you have to assume that there was something else going on. If it was something off the field, why was he even in uniform? Why didn't you just send him home if he did something so destructive that you can't play him and just have him stand there the whole game, play one special teams play, and then just stand there with his helmet, you know, looking helpless? Like, maybe he would have made some kind of a difference, even if it was minimal. Maybe they don't win the game if he plays more or plays the whole game or whatever. But just a very bizarre situation there, and still trying to figure that one out. I mean, other themes in this game, again, Foles, brilliant game. I mean, made some absolutely spectacular throws, a couple to Jeffrey in the first half against Eric Rowe, who replaced Butler. And I will say, Rowe was getting killed after the game. Rowe did not play a bad game. If you look at, I mean, the couple of plays he gave up to Jeffrey, I mean, he had really good coverage. It was, again, just great throws and catches by Jeffrey. And Rowe didn't really give up too much in the second half. Corey Clement, Corey Clement, what? Who? You know, third, you know, if you're in a league like we are, fantasy league like we are, maybe you have him in your lineup and you're praying that he gets four touches and can get you a cheap touchdown. In this game, he was a monster. Patriots had no answer for him. We'll get to the touchdown. I do have some thoughts on that. We'll get to that.
Great. I mean, but on that touchdown, we'll get to it. We'll get to it. All right.
I mean, we can do it. We can do it now. I mean, we have to go in order here. You know, I'm just bringing up some overall themes. The fourth and one, two fourth and ones that the Eagles executed and converted on, obviously the touchdown, which was a legal formation that was highlighted and pointed out. That should have been flagged. 6 men on the line of scrimmage. That's a no-no. That's a legal formation. Referees missed that. Apparently, Jeffrey nodded at the referee or something to say, am I okay? And the referee said, yes. Well, no, you're wrong. He was not okay. But whatever. You're not going to make a big deal about that. A tremendous play call by Peterson, who outcoached Belichick. You know, I mean, he was 2 and 3 steps ahead of Belichick the whole game. Emptied the playbook. Really a brilliant, brilliant coach game by Peterson. And then the fourth and one, the gutsy call to go it on fourth and one when they were down by a point in the fourth quarter with 6.5 minutes to go. A play that I initially said, you know, I don't know if this is necessarily the right decision here. But then when I gave it a little bit more thought and putting the result aside that they converted, I gave it a little bit more thought during the game. And I said, you know what? You know why that was the right decision? Because if you don't convert there and the Patriots get the ball back, they're probably going to score a touchdown. Brady's, I'm sure, going to take them a couple of yards to score a touchdown. But then at least, unless they go for two and convert, you're going to get the ball back with a score, only down a score, and with at least a decent amount of time to go, you would figure. If you punt the ball there, you may not get the ball back the rest of the game, game over. Maybe they Patriots score, whatever. So gutsy call, and definitely the right one. Obviously, they executed it and converted. So drive continues. They eventually score. So two, you know, huge plays in the game, obviously. You know, some other, you know, key plays in the game. Brady dropping the pass on 3rd and 5 at 9, on 3rd down at 9-3. They eventually went for it on 4th down, didn't convert. You know, he was wide open. Who knows what happens from there. Also a huge play in this game. And we talked, and, you know, going back to the Patriots secondary, which was, other than Roe, again, I thought he played okay. And Gilmore, who played a really good game. The other guys that they had replacing Butler too, Badamu, what's the guy's name? I had it written down over there. I forgot his name already. Badamushi, something or other, made a terrible, Badamushi Johnson, who was that, just bad. And Jordan Richards, who was equally as awful. Johnson actually missed a 3rd down tackle in the 3rd quarter on, I think it was Aguilar, who caught a 3rd down pass. If he wraps him up and tackles him there, they punt the ball away, the Eagles. That was a huge play because it resulted, that drive resulted in the Corey Clement touchdown. A couple other just blatantly terrible attempts at tackling, arm tackling all over the field at times by that Patriots secondary. And then we can get to Brandon Graham, the Wolverine, who I mentioned a couple weeks ago on the show, and said that he's made a living out of being perched and setting up shanty towns in the Giants' backfield. Well, actually had a really good game. I mean, he didn't only had the one sack only, you know, it was only the game winning sack and sack fumble on Brady, but he was in the Patriot backfield a decent amount, especially in the first half, and makes the play of the game, saves the, you know, wins the game, knocks the ball out of Brady's hands, recovered by the Eagles, and, you know, they kick the field goal. Yes, they get it back, the Patriots, and they have a chance for a Hail Mary at the end. Who cares? That was not going to, you know, barring, you know, a miracle, then we can have talked about that, but the game-winning sack strip fumble by Brandon Graham, the former Wolverine, and that is your ball game. Again, up and down the field for both teams and more up and down the field, and it ends up being a defensive play. That's the difference in the game, and that sums it up. I mean, that basically is what it was.
I don't think Bill Belichick and company expected Nick Foles to make as many good throws as he made. You have it here. Ben, don't break defense. Well, Nick Foles broke this Patriots defense. The ridiculous touchdown pass to Corey Clement. I mean, that was
Was it, though? Was it a touchdown? I actually have a theory on that.
It could have only been put in the precise place where it was for him to catch that pass. I think he had two defenders pretty much draped over him, and it was just tucked right into the back of the end zone. The ball moved a little bit. I think as he was catching it, they upheld it. He just made sick throw after sick throw. Yeah.
On that touchdown, so I have a theory on that. So if this was a regular season game, if that's a regular season game, that is not a touchdown. I guarantee you they overturned that. He, like you said, he bobbled the ball and gained possession of the ball, you know, actually established a catch, you know, possession of the ball and what would be defined as a catch, since we still have no idea what a catch is, but that's another, you know, another topic. But with 1 foot out, you know, 1 foot in, 1 foot out. If that's a regular season game, they overturn that. They don't overturn that here because they say, you know what, this is the Super Bowl. If we dare overturn this touchdown, and then the story is not, especially if the Eagles lose, and then all of a sudden the story is not about the game and who won and all that. The story is going to be the overturned touchdown and the catch, what is, what isn't, the controversy surrounding it. The NFL wanted no part of it. They said, uphold it. Don't give an explanation. Don't say a word. Because if you notice on the Zach Ertz play that they reviewed, the Zach Ertz touchdown, which was the right call, that was absolutely 17,000% a touchdown. Anybody that says otherwise doesn't know their ass from their elbow. Go home. That was a touchdown. But they gave you an explanation on that play. The Clement touchdown, they gave you nothing. All they said was the touchdown's upheld. Oh, thank you. Where's the explanation? Oh, I know. The explanation is we don't want to overturn this because we'd be terrified of the repercussions, so we're just going to uphold it. That is absolutely 1,000% why they upheld that touchdown without question.
Just to be clear, though, on the I think to distinguish the lack of explanation and the explanation, the Clement touchdown was ruling on the field stands, which they don't have to explain because it implies it may be a played overturn, but it's not indisputable evidence to overturn it.
Right. They usually give you something, though. I mean, they'll
not always. Not when the ruling on the field stands.
Super Bowl, they give you something, and they didn't purposely because they had nothing other than we are just too terrified of overturning.
Zach Ertz play was different because they basically confirmed the touchdown. They didn't say it stands because Sterator. Yes, he gave the explanation for why it was upheld, not because of why it stands. And I think usually when they say the ruling on the field stands, they don't provide an explanation.
Maybe certain ones that are up, but they will. I've seen them do it multiple, many a time for that scenario. Absolutely.
Satisfied you? All right, what would it have satisfied you if they said there was not indisputable evidence that the ball was that he did not maintain control of the ball while he touched his feet into the end zone?
I mean, I had no issue with it. It's not like I thought it should have been overturned.
But that's what they would have said. I mean, was that going to satisfy you?
I'm just making an observation. I had no issue with the touchdown. I thought, he caught the ball. He had 2 feet in bounds. You know, it was a little maneuvering of the ball, shuffling of the ball in his arms. To me, that's a catch. So I'm not going to go crazy. There are certain instances where it's not a catch and I would go crazy. Now, I'll be honest.
The problem is, the precedent, there have been calls in prior games where similar ball movement, it has been ruled incomplete.
Austin Seferian Jenkins, ring a bell.
Yeah. So, you know, it's always hard to compare. Every catch is different, but still, you've probably seen other catches where there was maybe similar or less movement than that one, and it was overturned. So,
I mean, again,
yeah,
they're never
going to fully get right, and they always talk about it. But, yep, I will agree that as a result of the way that it played out with the calls, we're not, you know, people weren't up in our, the discussion on Monday wasn't about what's the catch rule.
No.
That wasn't, you know, that was 10th down the list of things to talk about.
Yeah, I mean,
if they overturned either call, that would have been first or second.
I mean, yeah, so either one. But the Ertz call, they definitely got right. The Clement one is debatable because, again, the ball did, you know, shuffle in his arms when he came down with his second foot out of bounds. So
That one is debatable. Again, I'm not going, you know, I don't care. I mean, like, I thought it was fine that they upheld it. I didn't think there was one that they absolutely had to overturn. Again, we don't know what the hell a catch is. And Goodell even said, like, yeah, we have to kind of like get that straightened out because it's just ridiculous at this point. But that's my theory on it. So, you know, whatever, it doesn't matter. You know, it was a touchdown. The Eagles were a better team in this game. They absolutely deserved to win the game over the Patriots. You know, better, at least better offensively. And, you know, they made the one defensive play. And again, that was the difference in the game. But they were much better. And the Patriots, you know, you saw that they did it with smoke and mirrors all year with their defense. You know, the bend don't break. Well, like you said, the defense snapped in this game. And, you know, this, I mean, for me, one of the other themes was this was the Belichick, the master strategist, brilliant tactician, invested in-game adjustments, game management, all that. He could not overcome the Belichick that is mediocre to bad at picking personnel, assessing talent, and, you know, building a team. He is not good at that. And you saw that rear its ugly head with that defense on Sunday night. And he could not, whatever, you know, I've seen a few things written about his base defense in this game and maybe theories why Butler didn't play. Maybe it was for game reasons, going with a big nickel like he did with the Giants back in 1990. Or if you listen to Mike Francesa, you've heard that term many a time, big nickel, big nickel. Well, whatever he came up with in this game failed and just could not outmaneuver Doug Peterson, who was, again, 2 and 3 steps ahead of him all game, coached a brilliant game and, you know, emptied the playbook and just – you know, got a all-world performance from his backup quarterback. That is Nick Foles. Your starting quarterback for the 2018 New York Jets, Nick Foles. Hey.
Oh, God. you know, one part that leaves me slightly disappointed is we won't get to see if my theory would have had any merit in that if the Patriots won, would Tom Brady go out on top? So I think there's without a doubt Tom Brady is returning next year. Rob Gronkowski, apparently there were some rumblings that he was considering retirement. My guess is he will be back as well at the ripe age of 28 years old.
I mean, you never know, especially with everything we know now about what players know about concussions, and Gronkowski has had a few. Obviously, the one that he suffered in the Jaguars game and was cleared to play in this. And Gronkowski was unbelievable. Gronkowski was, especially in the second half. Oh my God! When he is on top of his game, there is nobody on the planet that can cover him.
Well, he had one catch for 10 yards, I think, in the entire first half.
Because you know they lose Cooks on a pretty dirty helmet-to-helmet hit. By what was it, Jenkins, and Gronkowski takes over in the second half. I mean, unstoppable, made some brilliant plays.
Two touchdown catches, I believe.
Yeah, yep. Two touchdowns. I mean, he is just something else. And again, when he is at his best, nobody on the planet can cover that guy.
He looked healthy on Sunday.
Yeah, that he did. And, you know, a few other interesting stats, actually. So there were 1,151 total yards by both teams in this game. Patriots actually averaged more than the Eagles per play at 8.5 yards a clip, which is pretty just staggering. And the Pats, of course, the first team in NFL history to rack up 600 yards of offense and lose
in any game,
in any
regular season, postseason,
regular season.
Incredible.
That is just incredible. Wow. And how about, and also this Brady last year. So last year we talked about how they, you know, they had a dink and dunk all game. I mean, the Eagle defense, we talk about the Patriots defense. How about the Eagles secondary? Oh my God. And I've been saying this all year that their secondary was terrible. I think the Eagles secondary was that much worse than the Patriots. As bad as the Patriots played, the Eagles secondary was so atrocious in this game. Guys, Chris Hogan running wild down the field. Chris Hogan. What the? They lose Cooks, and here's Amendola and Hogan and White and Gronkowski just running wild in the Eagles secondary. Think about this: last year Brady threw 62. Now he threw for 462 yards last year. Brady went on with 62 passes. This year he threw for 505 on 48 passes. Wow. I mean, last year it was dink and dunk. This year it was down the field to Hogan, down the field to Amendola. It was ridiculous. And, you know, their pass rush, you know, was sporadic throughout the game. The Eagles, I mean, they've got some pressure on Brady in the first half. Second half, they really were not getting any pressure at all. I mean, they seemed to have the Falcon syndrome, you know, being gassed in the second half. But again, when the game was on the line, here comes Brandon Graham. But I mean, just some incredible stats, incredible numbers. You know, no defense setting football back. You know, well, I guess this is the new football, so I shouldn't even say that. I mean, this is what football is now. Offense, offense, and more offense. Defense be damned for those that want to see, you know, defensive struggles like we have seen in, you know, past years in the NFL.
And so Matt Patricia, no longer a member of the Patriots coaching staff. Josh McDaniels is still a member of the Patriots coaching staff. Kind of pulling a Bill Belichick with the Jets back in, what was it, 2000, I believe?
Yep, I resign as like HC coach for the of NYJ on an
what napkin. What a bizarre turn of events where the Colts come out and announce McDaniels as the head coach, press conference next day. Robert Kraft and Bill Belichick decide, well, you know what? Hold on right there. Hold on.
And do with your best Boston accent. Hold on.
Who
right
knows
there.
What they said? What they said to him? Maybe added a couple of zeros to a check or something, and so he stays with the team. Maybe got some verbal promise and he'll take over the reins for Big Bill when Bill decides to take a lounge chair.
Well, maybe into the Tom sunset. Brady also.
Yeah, right. So
maybe Tom Brady.
That was a pretty
you know,
bizarre turn of events.
Yeah,
as well.
Maybe Tom cried on his shoulder. No, Josh, don't leave me. I mean, that is just astounding. And Monty Shmata in the Daily News absolutely ripped to shreds Josh McDaniel. And hey, it's tough to defend McDaniels here at all. I mean, you know, you string them along. You know, they think they have their head coach. They announce the press conference and then, never mind. I might be I'm taking over for Bill and they're giving me more money. I get to stay with my buddy, my BFF Tom, and spurns the Colts. And how about the owner sticking it to Bob Kraft, sticking it to the team that revealed Deflategate a couple of years ago as the Indianapolis Colts.
I think McDaniels even started hiring assistants for the Colts. Yep. and they're staying. How remarkable is that?
Yeah. I mean, at least as of now, I mean, you think everybody would be in limbo with who's our head coach? We're here. We don't have any head coach. Where's the head coach?
Bizarre.
Very, very, very bizarre. And, you know, not, but you know what? When you think about what the Patriots and how they operate and run things over there, really isn't that shocking, to be honest. And maybe Josh McDaniels maybe is that much of a yutz that we heard about in Denver and that when they ran him out there. Ran him out of there in a year and a half, similar to Ben McAdoo. So, and apparently his agent quit too. McDaniel's agent was like, you know what? You committed career suicide. Nobody's ever going to touch you. You know, maybe the Patriots eventually, but nobody else is even going to consider you for a second as a head coach. I'm out of here. Bye-bye, agents. And who happens to also be the agent of the Colts GM. So maybe the Colts GM was like, hey, how can you represent this guy? Come on. Very, very interesting indeed.
Yep. So, and final thoughts on closing the chapter to the 2017-18 NFL season.
It's a good riddance. As a Giant fan, having to watch those two teams playing the Super Bowl and having to see the Eagles win after having not won a damn thing since 1960, and just you know, good riddance to it. Giants miserable season, as we know. And now we get to all anticipate and speculate about what they're going to do in the draft, which I'm not interested in right now. Let's let a little bit of time go by before we start talking about that. Even
too early to say,
You'll probably see stuff every day. Actually, the couple of things from the game that I enjoy. Well, one thing that drove me insane was the use of the acronym RPO from Chris Collinsworth. Oh my God. Oh my God. RPO, run pass option. Oh, they're up. Oh, there's RPO. Oh, another RPO. Oh my God. Chris Collinsworth. Ah, they all game with the RPOs. They did this in every other game where you had a quarterback running those RPOs. Whether it be Mario. Well,
what if you did RPO? Oh, that have sweetened it for you.
Oh my God. All game with the RPO. And all Although Al Michaels actually had an interesting line when they were talking about how the Patriots never release injury information. And he said something to the effect that it was easier to get information out of East Germany when the Berlin Wall was still up than it is to get injury information out of the Patriots. So that was a good one. And only 103 million people tune in for the Super Bowl, the lowest since 2009, which is right in line with the trend that we've seen all year in the NFL of the declining ratings. Yes, the NFL maybe has a little bit of a problem on their hands. Yes. Who knows?
You want to talk about big sample sizes? So that the morning after on Monday, the first two people that I knew who I saw Monday morning, on my way to work or at work, I asked if they watched the game, and what did they say? No. Yes, big sample size. Yes, big sample size.
No, yes, Super Bowl. Yeah, how about that? Are they football fans and they were making a statement by boycotting the game, or are they just WGAS football?
No, there were no statements. It was just WGAS.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
There's more WGAS. There's probably just more general WGAS.
I think there was
previous years.
I mean, I enjoy how they still blame it. You know, well, it could be national anthem protests.
Yeah. I'm sure they're working on the report right now of breaking down why it's the lowest since 2009. But I think you and I could have a simple one page report that just says more WGAS and be done.
Yes, all right. Yes, indeed. Can't wait to. Can't wait to hear about the Eagles and their potential visit to the White House to visit the Donald.
Oh, God. Especially... Yeah, that'll be interesting. My guess is it's just not going to happen. It's not going to happen, is my guess.
Yeah. Oh, well. Another WGAS story. Yeah, right. Actually, and then how about the New York perspective? As the Empire State Building was lit up in green, which I guess angered some people after the Eagles won. But then the New York Post the next day, which was kind of funny. So they have on the front page, they have Eli Manning and Odell Beckham. And why would those two guys be on the front page of the Post? Well, I'm sure everybody can guess, as they dazzled America with their amazing dancing abilities, dancing to the dirty dancing and doing all those dirty dancing moves. Oh, and there they are. Giants win best commercial on the front page of the New York Post. And then a little blurb at the bottom. Oh, yeah, and Eagles win Super Bowl.
It was kind of a funny commercial.
Yeah.
This looks like Eli's healthy. Yes, he could jump into, I mean, Odell's healthy. He could jump into Eli's arms. Yes.
Oh, yes. He looked very spry there. I guess that ankle's fully healed. Can expect him back with his brand new $100 million contract next year. Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Indeed. Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
All right.
All right. I guess that wraps it up. I got nothing else.
That wraps it up. Okay.
At least for the NFL part, but there's so much other stuff to talk about.
Not really. I mean, look, pick one thread. There's just not that much. You pick a thread.
Pick a thread. I mean, just.
I think there's very minor. I'm not too excited about other stories right now in sports. To be frank,
it seemed like the one that excited you the most was St. John's victories over Duke and Villanova. But how about
you have something to counter with that?
I'm just saying. It sounds like out of everything we've talked about so far, that was the thing that gave you the most excitement.
It was very exciting. Right. You know, one thing I noticed that's kind of strange that I couldn't put my finger on. So, you know, I pointed out to you earlier today about maybe we're going to go catch the Big Ten tournament at MSG this year. First time it's at MSG. It begins on Wednesday, February 28th with the championship game on March 5th. You know what I realized? That's the weekend before Selection Sunday. So usually the Big Ten championship game is the game immediately before Selection Sunday, right?
Wait, yeah, what the hell? The Big Ten. Wait, so the
this
Big Ten?
So this year, the Big Ten tournament is ending a full week before Selection Sunday.
What the hell?
Isn't that bizarre?
Bizarre, yeah.
And so the Big East tournament is actually also taking place at MSG the following weekend. So if I have this right, the Big Ten is basically taking a week and a half off of whichever teams make the big the NCAA tournament. They're going to play that, no basketball.
Is that good? I mean, they get extra rest, or I don't know, is that it just bad? Seems they're going to be rusty.
We've never seen a conference tournament, at least to my recollection, a big conference tournament take place other than the weekend right before Selection Sunday.
I mean, they all usually finish, you know, that Thursday, Friday, and then like the big one.
It gets you into the mood of the excitement of the tournament. Because you're watching all the conference tournaments, right? There's a lot of good games going on, especially, you know, on Friday, Saturday, Sunday. But now that, I mean, look, the Big Ten isn't a super stacked conference this year. You know, you have Purdue, Michigan State, and Ohio State are really at the top, and then after that, there's a couple of decent teams that'll probably make it, Nebraska and Michigan, and after that, I don't think anybody else will.
Nebraska.
So it's but still, a pretty strange. I was trying to even Google an article talking about how odd that seems to be. And I really couldn't find anything quickly. I was just it occurred to me because I saw an ad for the Big East tournament March 7th to 10th, and I'm like, wait, yeah, but the Big Ten is February 28th to March whatever 3rd or something. March 4th.
That's
pretty sure.
I don't understand that one. I guess if you, like you said, the Big East is the next week, so I guess that makes sense. And that Big Ten goes first, then Big East. But then why would they just not choose a different venue for the Big Ten? I mean, the Big East is always at the Garden, as you know.
Right, there's no teams here for the Big Ten. I mean, it's not. It's a Midwest. How dare I forget Rutgers? That's right. Exactly. Anyway.
Yes, maybe Rutgers will have four wins coming into the tournament. Yes, let's see if they can keep the game within 45 points.
I don't know if they will. God.
Whoops.
Do you have a hipster moment of Zenith?
Is that that was the thread. Oh, I thought you gave me a choice of one thread, another option of one more thread. I just have to. Porzingis is out for the year. Okay, Knicks are terrible. Maybe they'll get the number one pick, whatever. Hopefully he comes back healthy. We can always get more into the Knicks. The Islanders. Now, I could have held off on the Islanders, but I have to get something in.
Please hold off there. Please pretty much hold off. Just make it very brief.
The only reason I have to get something in right now is because the GM. That's right, the GM – like the groundhog, appears once a year at the beginning of February to see if he sees his stomach sticking out in the shadows, and then he goes back into hiding and doesn't come back again till next winter. So he came out today. Gart Snow came out and spoke to the media today. Oh my God! And what did Gart Snow say? Well, he says the same thing that he does every year: rinse, wash, repeat. You can basically copy and paste the same Newsday article because, you know, there's no other publications that have anything about the Islanders. So you could pretty much cut and paste the same Newsday article at this time every single year. That's right. Gart Snow, the breaking news. Gart Snow says that the Islanders will not be trading high draft picks for rental players to help them, even though they have so many injuries. And they have so many terrible players taking up wasting space in their lineup. Oh, speaking of injuries, Gart Snow whipped out the injury excuse. Oh my God, what a stunner there from the GM Gart Snow. Gart Snow said, Gart Snow pointed to injuries as being 100%, direct quote, 100% the reason why the Islanders are in such a precarious position for the playoffs. Not making excuses, I'm stating a fact, says Gart Snow. There it is, ladies and gentlemen. We're not making any trades. I have no heat on me. Why should I? I have a lifetime job here, lifetime contract. I'm not getting fired. Who cares? And I'm not making excuses, but maybe I just will whip out the old injury excuse. I swear he is such a loathsome SOB. I despise him with every fiber of my being. He is legitimately worse than Mike Milbury. And I think we should undertake a project to determine if he is also the worst general manager in modern NHL history. I think you can make that statement and actually back it up with quantifiable evidence. with actual empirical evidence to support that statement. I really, really do.
You sound inspired to put your, if you had to produce a life's work, I think you summarizing the quantifiable evidence into a publishable report would be the very thing.
I think this is something that I'm gonna have to undertake, and let's see what we can dig up here. I mean, again, it's, you know, he's worse than Milbury. He has absolutely surpassed Milbury. I won't even entertain a debate about who's a worse general manager. As bad as Mike Milbury was, Gart Snow has surpassed him. It's what's so awful too is that there's nobody here in New York that gives a damn about the Islanders to put heat on them. No. You know, you'd have nobody on FA, and maybe Evan Roberts, if you call him, he'll just cry about the Mets. Ah, the Mets are terrible. Ah. You know, you can't call anybody else. What are you going to tell Bart Scott? Hey, Bart, how about those Islanders? Who are the Islanders?
Michael Kay, you know, yes.
Michael Kay, yeah, as well. I guess maybe you call Donnie LaGreca with Michael Kay. Donnie can talk about them. Whatever. Have you listened to any of Afternoon Drive now that the big guy barely is now well into his retirement? Have you listened to any of Afternoon Drive?
Honestly, I haven't listened to more or less Afternoon Drive compared to before the Mike retired, and that's not not a knock on him. It's just I'm not driving at that time usually. So
it's Afternoon Drive. If I'm not driving, how can I possibly listen to Afternoon Drive? Yes, well said, Mr. H. All right. Well, I guess that does it. We can we'll do a quick HMOZ before we get to the HBOW. So the HMOZ, I mean, it has to center around the events that have transpired in Philadelphia, does it not? After the Eagles won their first Super Bowl and first championship since 1960, the whole thing. So I don't know. I'm assuming that you saw all of the events and all of the transgressions that transpired after the Super Bowl. So this may not come as a shock to you, or it's really to anybody else. But I mean, you know, how could I resist? So we saw in Philadelphia, as a result of the Eagles winning, we saw crawling up lampposts, which they tried to deter by putting Crisco on there. And they failed yet again for the second straight or third, you know, for the second straight time after they tried to deter that after the NFC Championship game. We saw fans jumping off of awnings and the awning collapsing
at the Ritz.
Fine people at the Ritz. That's right. We saw cars flipped over and lit on fire. We saw looting at gas stations, and all par for the course. I mean, all that's par for the course for Philadelphia. But the one thing that did surprise me a little bit was the one fan who I'm hoping was beyond inebriated to the point where he didn't even know where he was or what the hell was going on, but decided to get on the ground and chow down on some horse dung on that was laying on the ground. Yes, that's right. For those that are not aware, and I'm sure if you paid any little bit of attention, I mean, this was like a national headline, fan eats horse shit.
You're the perfect way for you to culminate an evening.
For anybody that's celebrating their team winning a championship. If the Islanders ever win a championship, you better hose me down and tie me up, because who the hell knows what I would ever do if the Islanders ever win a cup.
And we have a special hip in the lip viewing event just to follow the lip on his adventure after following an Islanders Stanley Cup victory.
On a GoPro and just follow me everywhere. Well, we can see if we can outdo Nancy Pelosi, who set the record today of talking on the House floor for 8 hours. So maybe we can set the record there if the Islanders ever win the Stanley Cup, and maybe also set the record of lasting until one host strangles the other one or ties down and drugs the other one. And lastly, right, the parade will take place tomorrow, and Bud Light will be giving out free beer to all who are of drinking age. So sure that's going to go very swimmingly.
Wow.
Giving free beer to the Philly fans celebrating a Super Bowl.
Wow.
Yep.
All right.
So there you go. There is your HMOZ for the week. There's your recap of everything. And with that, we'll bring us to the final segment. I don't know how long we are in, much to the chagrin of the hip, who was hoping for a for a, you know, succinct program, but we can never do that here on H&L. But that'll take us to the very end. The final segment, everybody's favorite, yours and mine, that would be the Hipster Beer of the Week. So what do you got for us today, Mr. Hip?
Well, I haven't been able to consume too many over the past week or so due to the aforementioned gastrointestinal issues that were mentioned at the outset of the episode. And so I look back to the last few weeks, and courtesy of you, actually, going to LIC Beer Project and picking up a double release where both double IPAs were top-notch. 4.75 ratings on Untappd for both. From the Hip,
right.
They both exceed 4.35 or 4.3 at least on Untappd general ratings. Yes, this is what's important: is the public's perception, not your own.
Easily influenced.
Both sides of the rainbow and late night sun. They're you know, if you're in the New York City metropolitan area, they can be found in limited quantity at select locales in the area. If you're not from around here. Oh, well, pretty much every other beer that I mentioned, you would not be able to drink either, unless you're in the local New York City area.
Once in a while, I've done a few outside. You've done a few outside the metropolitan.
I'd say
couple.
10 to 20%. Yeah, monkish, there's some. All right, maybe I'm being a little harsh.
Wasn't there a Maryland one in there? Wasn't the?
Yeah, there's probably some more. Yeah,
and you did Dogfish Head. Right.
All right.
We don't discriminate here. You know, we beers of all parts of the country. Now we're just waiting for the Hip to take
international. All right. So, of course, and as this show, and so we say thank you and see you next time.
All right. Got that over with. Next.
Slurp it.
Everybody, slurp yourself silly.
Right now.